This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. In 1955, a young Canadian sat down in front of a battered piano in a New York recording studio and created a masterpiece. Glenn Gould was just 22 years old and not well known outside of his own country. But this performance of Bach's Goldberg Variations made him a star and then a legend. A man who could be distant, moody, and odd, but always, always brilliant. 26 years later, Glenn Gould decided to record another version of Goldberg Variations. His second recording was radically different, and it was released just a few weeks before Glenn Gould died of a stroke. He had just turned 50 years of age. Sony Classical and Legacy Recordings have just released a three-disc set which includes both versions of the Goldberg Variations and outtakes from Glenn Gould's 1955 recording session. Tim Page is the music critic for The Washington Post. He also appears on the new CD in a rarely heard, well, not interview exactly, more like a radio play with Glenn Gould in August of 1982. Tim Page joins us in our studios. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And how did you become Glenn Gould's mouthpiece in this interview?
Well, I would say it's a little bit more complicated than mouthpiece. I had just been sent a copy of the new Goldberg Variations, and I called him up, and we started talking about my thoughts on it. And he said, I think we should do a radio interview. And he started making notes on all the comments that I was making on the new recording. And then he invited me up to Canada. So I went up there, and what Glenn did was he took all of my opinions, incorporated them into this kind of strange radio play, and we did it at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Let's listen to a little bit of this interview playlet. Of course, the object of the interview was to get Glenn Gould to talk about why he wanted to record the Goldberg Variations again. And in this excerpt, what he didn't quite like about his earlier version.
I listened to it about 3 or 4 days before I went to New York to re-record it, and that would be in April 1981. I just sort of wanted to remind myself, you know, of what it was like. And to be honest, it had, at that point, been so many years since I'd heard it that I really was curious about what I would find.
What did you find?
I found that it was a rather spooky experience. I listened to it with great pleasure in many respects. I found, for example, that it had a real sense of humor, I think, all uh-huh. sorts of perky, spiky accents and so on that gave it a certain buoyancy. Uh-huh. And I found that I recognized at all points, really, the fingerprints of the party responsible. I mean, from a tactile standpoint, uh-huh. from a purely mechanical standpoint, my approach to playing the piano, you know, really hasn't changed all that much over the years. It's remained quite stable, I think. Static, some people might prefer to say. So I recognize the fingerprints, but, and it is a very big but, uh-huh. I could not recognize or identify with the spirit of the person who made that recording. It really seemed like some other spirit had been involved, and as a consequence, I was just very glad to be doing it again.
The 1955 recording is a recording of a very young man, a prodigiously gifted, brilliant young man, but still a very young man. It's very excitable, it's very passionate, it races like the wind, it struts, it sings. The second recording, while it has the same exalted level of pianism in it, is the product of much thinking about the music and also a lot more life. It's a recording by a 48-year-old man who, in fact, was in terrible health, although people didn't know it then, and it has a certain sadness and a sense of reflectiveness. And if you like an autumnal quality, which is completely distant from the 1955 version.
We want to invite people to listen closely, because if you do, you can hear one of the signature sounds of Glenn Gould's interpretation, which is the maestro himself humming along. After a while, was he aware that that had become part of his shtick, if you please?
Well, he thought it was a terrible habit and one that he really wanted to break, but he occasionally would try to avoid humming along, but he thought that the performances went to sleep. It was just somehow it was important to him to conduct along, to sing along, to lose himself in this really almost balletic way in the music. And he said, I don't know how anyone puts up with my humming, but the fact is I play much less well without it. And they did a lot of things to try to hide the humming. Believe me, if you had been in the room with him while I was playing, you would have heard the humming much more loudly, because he really, really sang along. But for him, playing the piano was a sort of ecstatic transport, and it was just something which, when he was making music, he was really not very aware of what he was doing.
Bach, and especially the Goldberg Variations?
Well, I think, first of all, it's the incredible richness of the music, and especially this piece. I mean, the Goldberg Variations basically takes a very simple theme. I mean, it's really almost nothing more than a set of chord changes at some point, and creates 30 intricate, very, very rich variations on top of them that really explore just about every emotion known to human beings. He was also very interested in a distinct separation of different voices in contrapuntal music.
The music that really interests me is inevitably music with an explosion of simultaneous ideas, which counterpoint, you know, when it's at its best, is. And it's music where one, I think, implicitly acknowledges the essential quality of those ideas.
Bach has all these different voices going at once, and I think what was interesting about the Goldberg Variations was, until Glenn recorded this and until it became one of the really startling bestsellers in 1955, the Goldberg Variations in particular were considered a very austere and rather distant creation, really almost an academic exercise. And Gould recognized all the wonderful music in them and really brought it to life.
Remind ourselves about what was considered so innovative in his interpretation.
Well, I think there were a few things that were innovative. Number one, he played so brilliantly, so quickly, and with such distinct separation between the two hands when he was playing. He also, I've sometimes compared him to people like James Dean and Marlon Brando, to the method actors of the 50s, who on the one hand were these kind of strutting, aggressive, almost frightening figures, but on the other hand, you'd see this incredible tenderness, and that's what you hear in a lot of Glenn's playing, especially in that 1955 Goldbergs. One moment he'll be strutting and he'll be proud and proclamatory, and then the next moment it's this very aching, wistful tenderness, and I think he was really exploring an emotional range in Bach, which was not always explored in performances then.
Mm. I'm told that Bach rarely specified tempo or dynamics when he notated his music, but I gather Glenn Gould was convinced that he played the Goldberg Variations with exactly as Bach would have required it. Let's listen to what he told you in 1982.
I just think that all the evidence suggests that Bach didn't give a hoot about specific sonority or even volume, but I think he did care to an almost fanatic degree about the integrity of his structures, you know? I think he would have been delighted by any sound that was born out of a respect for the necessity, the abstract necessity of those structures, and appalled, amused maybe, but appalled nonetheless, by any sound that was born out of the notion that by glossing over those structures, mm-hmm. it could improve upon them in some way.
It's a very confident man, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think he's right, though.
You knew him for how many years, Tim?
I knew him for 2 years, but I only met him about a month before he died. He was one of the best friends that I'd never met. We would spend 2-3 hours at a time on the telephone, maybe 2 or 3 nights a week.
Is it true that he wore scarves and mittens, even in July?
Absolutely. He did have high blood pressure, which sometimes makes people very susceptible to cold. And he also probably had something which is called Asperger syndrome, which also makes people have kind of an unusual sensitivity to their environment, either that or no sensitivity to it at all. It's sort of a form of autism, and it's being explored by a number of people now, but there is some evidence that Glenn Gould did have this particular condition. He was also one of the most jolly and spontaneous conversationalists imaginable. I mean, he was a mimic. He was full of humor. He was interested. He was courteous. Almost anything you can say about Glenn Gould, you can say the opposite thing and have it be somewhat true. He was just a very paradoxical and very, very interesting man.
Glenn Gould chose Variation 25 to play for the soundtrack of the movie Slaughterhouse-Five to, in a sense, score the real-life burning of Dresden. He said it was the most talked-about variation among musicians. Why would that be?
Well, it's an extraordinary variation. I mean, it's unbelievably complicated, very chromatic, by which I mean there are all sorts of dissonances and passing phrases. And even though it's so slow, if you've ever sat down and tried to play this variation, it's almost impossible to make coherent sense out of it unless you really, really know it cold. It really almost sounds like Arnold Schoenberg or some 20th century composer here and there. Such is the density of the writing and the chromaticism. And I think he chose it to accompany the bombing of Dresden, I think in part because it was such an incredible contrast to what one might expect in Slaughterhouse-Five. I mean, one might think of something awful like the 1812 overture with cannons going off or something, but what he wanted to do was capture the whole range of human tragedy, and it is probably some of the most achingly sad music Bach ever wrote.
Glenn Gould was an original, and he played classical music, as we identify it. At the same time, to what degree was he influenced by his times, by other forms of music, by cultural figures, celebrities?
I think Glenn really tuned in only to what he wanted to tune into. Like, great geniuses are never normal people in a lot of ways. At least I can't think of anyone. And Glenn had a marvelous ability to tune out whatever he wanted to tune out. I mean, he was not really spiritually at home with a lot of the music that was being made in his time, but he was very interested in it. His real lack of interest was in the classics of the piano repertory, the works of, say, Chopin and Schumann and Mendelssohn and Liszt. He really didn't like that music very much, and he actually played it as if he disliked it.
He played it as if he disliked it?
Oh, yeah. He made a recording of the Chopin Sonata in B minor, which is, I'll try to be kind here, and I'll call it an atrocity. It's absolutely awful. He hated the piece. He played it as if he hated the piece. You wonder why he did it. But then again, that's Glenn Gould. He was part great, austere, brooding genius and part mischievous little kid.
Tim, thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott. It's a pleasure.
Tim Page is the music critic for The Washington Post, also author of the book Tim Page on Music. Music we've been talking about is from the new CD Glenn Gould, A State of Wonder, the complete Goldberg Variations, 1955 and 1981. It's being released to commemorate the 70th anniversary of Glenn Gould's birth this month. Glenn Gould and his recordings of the Goldberg Variations, you can visit our website at npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.